This is lecture 22. Just to summarize, the last lecture introduced coherent states. We had a fixed vector, which was the ground state of a harmonic oscillator. Q and P satisfy the standard Heisenberg commutation relations. Take them as self-adjoint. We built two unitary transformations, exponentiating P and Q. Acting on this normalized vector called the fiducial vector, and that defined for us the coherent states. They were continuous in their labels. We were able to give the overlap function, or at least I told you what it was. E to the I by 2, P prime plus P, Q prime minus Q, minus 1 quarter, P prime minus P squared plus Q prime minus Q squared, H bar. Notice the units I'm kind of using. I'm letting P and Q have similar units, and P squared or Q squared is like an H. So here's a P times a Q. They have the similar units. P times Q has the units of H bar. So that's why that is dimensionless, fine. And we learned the very important fact that if we integrate over these one-dimensional projection operators here, over the whole phase place plane, we get the identity operator. That enables us to build a representation of Hilbert space by means of functions which image an abstract vector into a function on the phase space. And that gave us a representation of Hilbert space, which is different than psi of Q, the Schrödinger representation, or its Fourier transform, but it's a useful new version. Okay, let's spend some minutes talking about change of coordinates. We're interested in changing from P and Q to another family, call them P bar and Q bar, which are also canonical coordinates. Here's the central idea. There is a two-dimensional manifold M, which is our phase space. There's an infinite dimensional space over here, script H, which is our Hilbert space. Ideally, we would like to map points of the phase space into vectors in the Hilbert space. I will choose these to be unit vectors and a subset of the whole Hilbert space. So this thing is entirely mapped over here into some small region of the Hilbert space. Well, how do I do that? I can't do it just saying point, because that's not how we think. I have to lay down coordinates. So there's a P and a Q, which describe the point. And so I have a point X, if you like, over here. But I'm labeling it by P and Q, which are its coordinates, and I'm mapping that over into this vector, which I would like to have abstract, but how do I identify the vector? I put in the same labels. It's the vector associated with the labels of the point in the phase space. Now, when I lay down a different set of coordinates, P-bar and Q-bar. That's mapping over into a vector, which is the same vector as before, but I give it the name P-bar Q-bar. This is both the beauty and the curse of the Dirac notation. The beauty is you have that the symbol, so here's notational discourse. The beauty is that you have the you have the ket, what I'm talking about here is a ket, which means vector. And what stands inside is a label, anything you like. I could put a heart inside. That would correspond to some kind of label for a vector. Not a very useful one until I tell you what heart stood for. If I take a traditional Q eigenstate and I put 17 in it, you don't know a lot. You simply don't know what that refers to. That's why the Q is in there to not only specify the number 17, but to tell you by its symbol that it relates to probably the Q operator or the P, because P could also be 17. And this 17 coming from the P family is completely different from this 17 coming from the Q family. So the beauty of the Dirac notation is it's concise, simple, but the curse is it tends to be confusing. So when I put P bar Q bar here, and you read that as 3 comma 4, don't interpret that as 3 comma 4 in these names, because this is a different family of coherent states. How is this one actually defined? Since we have this prescription here for our original definition of the coherent states, all I'm doing is I'm expressing this little q in terms of new variables p bar and q bar. Clearly, this will not in general be a simple linear multiplier to p. This could be q cubed or something, q bar cubed or something quite different. Nevertheless, things now depend on P bar Q bar. This is exactly the same state as it was before. The same state in Hilbert space. It just has a different name.
It's like you live at Second Avenue and First Street. Then there's a tornado comes down, and a new mayor says, I'm giving up on numbers, we're going to label them by alphas and betas, Greek letters and Roman letters, A, B. So you now live at Alpha, capital B Street. But your house hasn't changed. You're living at the same place. It's the same house, just the name of what you call it. Okay, so let's see what this does for us. This kind of interpretation. Let us take the resolution of unity statement in terms of new coordinates. Now, what do we know about new coordinates? First off, they are different names for the very same vectors, therefore the very same projection operators. But since they are canonical transformation one from another, the Jacobian of that transformation is unity. So this is functionally the same form as it was in the original coordinates. These coordinates are special. The Q and the P, as they are called right here. That this is linear here. And in group language, these are called canonical coordinates. Like this. In fact, the way I've written it here, these are called canonical coordinates of the second kind. Now, if you're like me, you raise the question in your head, what the heck are the first kind? If that's the second kind, what's the first kind? This would be the first kind.
where everybody is in the same exponent. These are not in the same exponent. These are in two different exponents. And they don't commute with each other. So this thing is not exactly that thing. People often use this one in place of what I'm doing. But that's not where we're focusing today. These are canonical coordinates. The first kind, these are canonical coordinates. The second kind, they have a very nice behavior. But they are merely one set of coordinates, not anything special. Do you have a face that you want to ask a question? No?
Okay. All right, let's look at something else.
We're going to be looking at matrix elements of operators such as P prime, Q prime, bra, H operator, P, Q, ket. In the new coordinate, this is going to be a function of those four variables. In the new coordinates, as the same vector, the operator is unchanged. This becomes a new function of the new coordinates. That function is the same, gives the same numerical values at the as the previous function did at the same points of distance. In particular, when I take the diagonal matrix element, that will be a very important function for us. That only depends on two variables, P and Q. In fact, if H is Hermitian, and self-adjoint is what we really want, but Hermitian is good enough, then this thing will equal its complex conjugate. Therefore, that's real. The expectation value of a Hermitian operator should be real, so that's real. If the Hamiltonian, call it the Hamiltonian for the moment, it will be, if the Hamiltonian was a positive operator, that would make that a positive function. All those kind of things. Okay. What is it in the new coordinates? Well, that becomes P bar Q bar H P bar Q bar. That is a new function of the new coordinates, which numerically has the same values as the old function of the old coordinates. We will be interested in another kind of operation, too. We will be interested in different superpositions of this projection operator. If I integrate this straight away, I get the identity operator. But what if I put in a weight function, a little h of p and q? That gives me an operator in general, and it won't be the identity operator. Only if this was unity, the number one, have I arranged for that to be the identity operator. More generally, that's another operator, capital H we'll call that, I guess. This is a different symbol. These things are called symbols. So H, P, and Q is one kind of symbol. Little h, P, and Q is another kind of symbol. Certainly we'll find the relation between the two. What I want to stress today, or right here, is what happens if I change coordinates? Well, what we have learned is that the projection operators are the same projection, just different names. A measure is invariant under that transformation, and what is here, I must have the same weight function of these linearly independent projection operators in order to have a particular operator. So this thing must transform in such a way that numerically it equals the old function of the old values. This is what you mean by a scalar. A scalar is a function which transforms in such a way that its new values in the new coordinates, new function of the new coordinates equals the old function of the old coordinates. You had a hand up?
Yeah, do you have to say almost everywhere?
So the question is almost everywhere. I'll be interested in smooth enough functions here that that's not a major issue. Okay, so that's a little bit about coordinate changes. I think it's a beautiful chapter in this business. Not so easy to describe in the usual Q or P eigenvector situation. Question.
Would that give us the classical Hamilton, the H of?
So, is this one here?
No, the one about that.
Here?
Yeah. No. Yeah, the H.
So your question is this the classical Hamiltonian?
Yeah.
I love to call this the classical Hamiltonian. And I'll tell you why. Let us evaluate it. So this is O, H, O, e to the minus I, Q, P over H bar, e to the I, P, Q over H bar, e to the I, Q, P over H bar, e to the minus I, P, Q over H bar. We've already seen, and let's make this H depend on P and Q, sorry about that. We've already seen how this will transform the individual operators capital P and capital Q. It transforms them in such a way that capital P becomes capital P plus little p, capital Q becomes capital Q plus little q, expectation value. Now, that's a beauty of this choice of coordinates. The canonical coordinates are simpler, period, like this. If this was a Q cubed, this would not be a translation that was similar to the capital Q. It would be something more complicated. Anyway, imagine this to be a polynomial. The argument goes through more generally, but it's a lot easier to think of it as a polynomial. Polynomial means I have powers of this, powers of that. One of the terms in that polynomial will be purely composed of p, little p, and little q alone. So that will be h of little p and little q. The same function of little p and little q. Everything else after that will contain an operator, either 1p, 1q, or more. Expectation value of those operators. Now, expectation value of q, p, anything you like, is small, of order h bar. For the harmonic oscillator thing. So this is an order h bar function of p and q. So as h bar goes to zero, this thing gets smaller and smaller. This is indeed what we normally would think of as the classical Hamiltonian. This is not the usual classical Hamiltonian. This is much, much closer, and we'll see that perhaps later, to normal ordering of the Hamiltonian. In any case, yes, it's something we're going to see very strongly is worth identifying as the classical Hamiltonian. Similar argument applies to little h. Little h down here, we will find, is equal to, it creates an operator which is essentially itself plus order corrections. So up to h bar, these two guys equal to each other. The only differences come in terms which depend on little h bar.
Little h bar, there's only one h bar, big h bar, little bar. All right. Now we're ready for the new version of a path integral.
So, here is the state vector at time t in a representation induced by the coherent states. This state vector is given by the unitary evolution by the Hamiltonian capital H of the state vector at time zero. I will now insert a resolution of the identity. resolution of identity could be anything I choose, but I'm going to make it another coherent state resolution of unity. dp prime dq prime divided by 2 pi h bar. That formula is on the board in one form or another. This is propagating the initial wave function into the final wave function, albeit in the coherent state representation. This quantity in here is our new form for the propagator. It takes getting some used to. Because it has two labels at the beginning and two labels at the end. Well, that's because our states are labeled in that way. Anyway, this is the propagator. And we're going to now develop a path integral expression for that propagator. Before we begin, or rather before we do that, I just want to tell you what the answer is. We will find that K from the beginning label to the final label over time t has a formal path integral representation which should look familiar to you. My God, it's the same formula that we've had before for the configuration space propagator. What I'm telling you, that this expression is sufficiently ill-defined, sufficiently ambiguous, that it will not only give you the original Feynman propagator between sharp Q states, but interpreted differently, it will give you the coherent state propagator. Let's do it.
Here also, are we going to hold P at the end, hold Q at the endpoints and not P?
We hold P and Q at the endpoints of this integral. P and Q at the endpoints of this integral. This one, we only hold the Q. Well, it's another indication that these path integral expressions are relatively meaningless and have to be carefully interpreted. Okay, here we go. The quantity of interest, given here. We write that as product of many little steps forward in time and it is my custom that I have n plus one of those steps which times epsilon will be my total time constant. I now put in a resolution of unity between those separate steps, something that we have done before. But this time, I put in coherent state representation every time along the way. So here will be a Pn, Qn, Pn, Qn, dPn, dQn, divided by 2 pi h1, etc. So let's write down what that looks like, and there's going to be an integral, of course, for all of those. That expression becomes the following product, L equals 0 to n, PL plus 1, QL plus 1, E minus I, epsilon H, H bar, PL, QL, so times the number of integrals, L equals 1 to n, dpl dql divided by 2 pi h bar.
Again,
we have pn plus 1, qn plus 1 is the same as p double prime, p0, q0. Our initial point is p prime. This is true for every epsilon, for every n, but now I wish to make an approximation. I wish to make an approximation in which I regard epsilon as very small, so I can take the first terms in a power series expansion of that exponential. So we have pl plus 1, ql plus 1, 1 minus I epsilon operator h divided by h bar. I stop there. PL, QL. Product L equals 1 to N. DPL, DQL. 2 by h bar. I have made an error of order h, of order epsilon squared in this approximation to go from the exponential to these first two terms, epsilon squared. But there are n of those terms, so n times epsilon is a quarter t, so I have an error, which is an order epsilon. To fix that, I will take a limit as epsilon goes to 0, n to infinity, such that n plus 1 epsilon equals t. Y L equals 0 to n. PL plus 1, QL plus 1, PL, QL, that's bringing this term with a 1. Then I have a minus I epsilon over h bar, PL plus 1, QL plus 1, h, PL, QL, end of bracket, and then I have the product. L equals 1 to n, dpl, dql, I don't have the error anymore because I've taken, in principle, my limit on this question. Now, just as we had in an earlier version, this is our best version. In this sense, if you're actually going to compute something, you're able to take this to a computer that could handle complex numbers, they can handle complex numbers, but can they handle them in such magnitude that they can subtract big numbers from big numbers and get reasonable answers? That's really difficult. So, Monte Carlo issues on such problems are hopelessly complicated. Anyway, so imagining you were going to do something on a computer. This is the thing we would like to use, but we don't want to stop there because we want to understand the principles of it, and we want to come closer to this ridiculous claim that we're getting this expression. So I'm going to look at the integrand a minute. The integrand is L equals 0 to N, PL plus 1, QL plus 1, and I'm going to factor that out, now this time make it slightly differently, PL plus 1, QL plus 1, PL, QL, QL plus 1, H, over P times PL, QL, now it's over, PL plus 1, QL plus 1, PL, QL, and that's the integrand. I've been able to actually divide by this because we know from the last lecture what the form of the overlap is, and the overlap never vanishes, so there's no ambiguity in this. It's a product of two terms. Let me study them separately in an effort to get a form for the integrand, which we'll write down in our traditional physicist way that we get when we interchange this limit with the integrals. We're going to write down for the integrand the form it takes for continuous and differentiable paths. Form for integrand for continuous and differential paths.
Are they differentiable?
Question?
Are they differentiable?
Well, the question was, are they differentiable? The question are there paths? Are there paths, first of all? And the answer is no. And so, even if there were paths, they wouldn't be differentiable. So, you're right. It's a fiction. But we like to write down something that we can visualize. Okay, so let's talk about the first factor. Let's just look at that term here. You have this one in your head. We can use this space. Product L equals 0 to n. First factor is 1 minus PL plus 1 QL plus 1 PL plus 1 QL plus 1 minus PLQL. All I've done is insert 1, here's 1, and I've subtracted 1 because these are unit vectors. Now, these paths are going to be continuous by hypothesis, so these labels are very close to these labels. That means the vectors are very close to each other. This difference vector is small in length. So I can approximate that by e to the minus PL plus 1 QL plus 1 times this difference vector. And then instead of the product outside, I can put that upstairs as a sum. Now we want to go to the continuum limit of this. Well, to me, that would mean integral P of t, Q of t, d of P of t, Q of t. D meaning the differential of that vector, giving me the difference between that vector and the neighborhood. Well, let me write it another way. Let me write d by dt and multiply by dt. And instead of the minus sign, I'm going to write I times I. And then we don't have an h-bar downstairs, so I put one in, and then I put one upstairs. So this is the first part of our expression for the integrand. We'll evaluate that in just a moment. The second term is product 1 minus this quotient. Epsilon is small. This is supposed to be a small factor. Again, I've got to put it back in the exponent. E to the minus I epsilon summation of this matrix element quotient. And I pass to the continuum limit here. For continuous trajectories, that becomes a dt. This becomes the same label, P of t, Q of t, P of t, Q of t, but that's a normalized vector. And upstairs I have only P of t, Q of t. Diagonal matrix element, the expectation value of that operator in the coherent state. And as we've already just been arguing, we've talked about before, that this is a good candidate for the function, which is our Hamiltonian. So what have we learned so far? We have learned
that. K of P double Q double T prime Q prime 0 is formally written in the following way. I, expectation PQ, PQ with a derivative inside, minus PQ Hamiltonian, PQ expectation value, integral dt. We have all those multiple integrals here of the p's and q's, which we write this way. And we have all the 2 pi h bar factors, which becomes our m integral. Okay. That's a construct from the quantum theory of the formal expression, which kind of looks like it plays the role of the Lagrangian expressed in phase space variables for the system. Okay, let's figure out what that is. Here is PQ. E to the minus I QP over H bar. E to the I PQ. I'm going to take a differential of that, varying the parameters P and the parameters Q. Variation of this will bring down a capital P. I'm going to put that inside. Let me multiply by I and by H bar at the same time. It's a little more convenient. So I bring down a capital P, I have a variation, I have a little dq, but the I times the minus I gives me plus 1, and the h bar cancels that h bar, so that's exactly what I have. Over here, everything is the same, except I have a minus sign, that minus sign is not there, and then I have a dp times the operator q, and that's standing by e to the I pq by h bar. Sorry, I should have had another H bar right next to that. Okay, now I bring up the state PQ with regard to that. That is O, E to the minus I PQ H bar, E to the plus I QP H bar, times this guy, which is e to the minus I cube cap p h bar, expectation value d, rather of, not quite expectation value, but other operator dq, little dq times cap p, little dp times cap q. And then we have finally e to the I p q by h bar, and close of effect. Okay, well, these two cancel in the middle, and so I'm left with this transformation out here with the IP, and this one over here with the e to the minus IP. We know what that does. That translates the big P to little p. So that gives me a dq times a translated of big P with little p minus a dp q. We've already decided, shown before, that the expectation values of the individual operators P and Q are zero. So this term vanishes, this term vanishes. All I have is P dQ times the normalized vector here. That becomes P dQ. So our next expression for this would look like this. PQ dot. So we got from this first expression. And this one we simply define as our classical Hamiltonian, albeit that it may have some H bar corrections. So we have completed our task of
showing that that has the desired form. It's a completely different lattice prescription, which has given us this answer. But in its formal statement, it is
how do you find the functional form of this Hamiltonian from the real classic, real Hamiltonian which we have? It's not the same functional form.
That is correct. He wants to know about the real functional form. We're about to take that up. Your questions are often right on time. Determination, if you will. HPQ. If I take my operators in the following form, make a polynomial out of these. That's MN. It's easier to discuss polynomials examples. So I write them in this way. You'll notice that this is proportional to the annihilation operator. This is proportional to the creation operator. It's called normal ordering. And I take the diagonal expectation of that in the state PQ. And the answer is sum AMN cubed minus IP to power M cubed plus IP to power M. Now, of course, on this side, things don't, they commute because these are C numbers. Over here, they don't commute because these are operators. But if I put it in normal ordered form, then it's a one-to-one transcription of this operator. What about p squared plus q squared as a Hamiltonian? What would that look like in this version? Well, if I write that in terms of annihilation operators, A and A dagger, then there is a ground point energy here. I would have to have h bar over for my correction to this. How do we do that? How do we know that? Because this is Q plus IP, Q minus, well, I'll do it the other way around. That's Q squared plus P squared. And there's a term which is the commutator, which is minus I, P commute with Q. That is Q squared. P squared minus H bar. So in fact, it's not 2. So I bring that H bar over to this side, plus H bar. And I have my original Hamiltonian expressed in terms of these. Normally, we divide these back by factors 2 to make it 1 half P squared plus 1 half Q squared, etc. But this is the version over here. So this is the connection for generating family of polynomials. It's actually rather interesting that the diagonal elements, diagonal matrix elements, PQ, H, PQ, actually determine the off-diagonal elements. So that would determine this situation. There's enough information in the diagonal elements to determine the off-diagonal elements. That is certainly not true
than the conventional Schrodinger representation. Q times operator Q does not give you enough information to determine the off-diagonal matrix elements. But for the coherent states down here, that is in fact true. Okay. We can also describe this operator business in a slightly different way. We've already said that the operators Q and P are irreducible.
What does that mean?
That means the only operator that commutes with Q and P is a multiple of the identity. Stated otherwise, every operator is a function of P and Q. Now, how do I determine function?
First, I would say a polynomial, and then I would take limits which close that sequence of operators. But I can reach every operator through this P and Q.
One generating family of such quantities are the very examples we've been talking about before, where we have the Q and P up at an exponent.
I'm going to tell you that these form a basis for an algebra. First off, linear combinations over K and X are straightforward linear combinations. But multiplications of an operator of this kind with another operator of this kind are simply a phase factor times another, an operator again of this kind. This is essentially like a group up to a phase factor. This is like a group.
So another way to put it is that I can actually integrate over these with a suitable weight function. We'll call it HW for Weil, who did this. This is the Weil representation. And make an arbitrary operator in the Hilbert space. In fact, let me put a tilde over that just to make life happier. Okay. Let me take the diagonal matrix elements of this operator, which is what we are calling capital H of P and Q. Straight H, this is script H. That gives me the integral of H tilde sub W, P, KX, XK, times the matrix elements PQ, e to the I, KQ minus XP, I by H bar, PQ, integral DK DX, I by 2 by H bar. Well, we've seen this now many times. When I have this coherent state like this, I can expose the fiducial vector simply by introducing a translation of the operator Q by little q and the operator capital P by little p. This is now the evaluation of that numerator upstairs, of this term upstairs. One more expression. Part of this term in the exponent will come straight out because it's a pure C number. So I have e to the I k q, I'll put the parentheses somewhere else, q here, minus xp divided by h bar times o, 0, o, e to the I k q minus x p o h bar. Dk, there's a dk dx here, and a dk dx here. Okay, one more minute, we'll finish this one. Okay, we know what that is. I tell you what it is. That is e to the minus 1/4 k squared plus x squared plus k squared divided by h bar dk dx 2 pi h bar. Then we have h w tilde of xk. Then we have e to the I k q minus xp for h bar. And that gives me h plus p and q. Here is a function, the product of these two, and this is nothing but the Fourier transform of that quantity. So if I undo the Fourier transform, do the Fourier transform on this function, call that xk, and that is nothing more than the product of these two terms in the integrand. Since this term never vanishes, I can uniquely associate this wave function with this diagonal matrix orbit of the Hamiltonian. Indeed, I can take this diagonal matrix element, do its Fourier transform, bring this to the other side, that is to multiply by the e to the plus of that, and that gives me the proper weight function in here to represent that operator in the first place. So that's an association with the so-called Weyl representation of this diagonal matrix element symbol. Okay, we quit for the day and we